I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of
welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always, always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, if you listen often enough, you know my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan joins me on the show each month to answer your questions on health and the healing process. We're going to open the show today by addressing two very important topics, the basics of mold toxicity and Lyme disease. But we welcome your questions at any time. In fact, this is so often the case with both Dr. Jill and Dr. Troy that you're maybe just leaning in and listening, and I totally get it. But then the questions flood in after the bottom of the hour, and they keep coming in till after the show, and we can't get to all of them. So if you wouldn't mind texting any questions on health and the healing process, start them now, and then we'll just sort of kind of intersperse them in our conversation. You can text your questions to 877-933-2484. But did you know this, that approximately one in four people have difficulty processing mold, and it's because of something genetic about them? And I'll have Dr. Jill unpack that. Did you know that some people are misdiagnosed with neurological or other autoimmune issues that are actually sick from mold? And did you know that some very gorgeous buildings look new and look great, but actually are moldy buildings, maybe because they didn't wrap the windows correctly or something like that, where you can't always see it, but it still can be a sick building? And you know, it's super interesting that I'm going to have Dr. Jill comment on. Dr. Troy, who joins us every month, says he's noticing a significant connection between Lyme and long-haul COVID patients. Isn't that interesting? He started to just, as he's studying both of these, because so many Lyme patients have had a flare in the last 6 months, he started to notice some similarities. So he tested some of his long-haul COVID patients, and they had Lyme, and they didn't know it. Kind of fascinating. So why do some people react to mold while others don't? We're going to address these questions and more on today's show. Just so you know, Dr. Jill is fast becoming a world-renowned expert. Well, she actually is a world-renowned expert in the areas of mold and other autoimmune issues. Dr. Jill Carnahan is both an MD and a functional med doctor. She's an expert in health and the healing process. She's a woman of God, and she's my friend. And just a caveat that I need to say every time we have a doc on the show, she's not here to diagnose you. She is here to help with the healing process. Quick announcement before you hear from Dr. Jill. I want you to honor your pastor. It's Honor Your Pastor Month. We love our pastors. We want to honor them all year long. But here we've got a great opportunity to send your pastor and their spouse on a retreat at the Cove in Asheville, North Carolina, Billy Graham's Cove. It's an amazing retreat center. We can't wait to do that. So tell us about your pastor. You find the information on our website at myfaithradio.com. All right, let me tell you about my guest, and we'll get her on the show. Dr. Jill Carnahan is board certified in both family medicine and integrative holistic medicine. She owns her own practice, Flatiron Functional Medicine, in Louisville, Colorado, and we love her so much. Dr. Jill, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Susie. It is a highlight of my month to be here with you.
Looking forward to our conversation. And we love to start every day talking scripture. And I love how you love God's word, Jill. So let's start there. What's God been speaking to you about these days?
Yeah, well, this one, I bet so many of you listeners hold this one so dear. And I thought, gosh, couldn't I be more creative? But I have to tell you why. The verse is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. I may have even mentioned it before, but there's a reason. It's trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight, or make straight your paths. I love this verse so much, and it's always meant a lot to me. But recently, as I've been journaling and praying the last 7 to 10 days, God continues to put on my heart. I have it written in my journal maybe 3 or 4 times. Jill, what if you don't have to figure it all out? And I bet you listeners out there, some of you are like me. I live in my mind. I figure out problems for a living. I love to analyticalize. I think that's a new word. I love to have analysis for the problems and figure things out. And we're going to talk about health problems and mysteries. And both Susie and I have dealt with our own. And so often we get stuck in that circle of, and I'm sure you listeners have heard this, I had this before too, where you're just stuck trying to figure things out. And God has just put on my heart, what if you don't have to figure it out? What if you can trust me with all your heart and lean away from your own understanding and just know that I'll take care of it? I'm the great physician. And as we talk today about really complex topics, and I'll share a little bit about what I've been through in my own journey, God just keeps letting me rest on Him and reminding me of this old, classic, beautiful verse that I don't have to figure it out and I don't have to have all the answers. And Susie, I cannot tell you what a precious relief that is when I hear that.
You know, it's so true, Doc, especially when we're hyper-responsible, because we're not going to wing things. We're not going to not prepare. We don't, you know, I mean, we are preparers. So that's why I think it rubs at first, because it's so different than what our instinct is. But you're so right. It's such a precious gift where He's saying, I'm not asking you to figure it all out. I got this, and I'm going to show you. Yes. You just trust me. So I love it. It's a beautiful invitation. And, you know, you've told your story, and friends, you just have to go back and listen to past shows with Dr. Jill, because when you have time to really, like, I think we gave a whole half hour to it one day, and there's even, you know, they're doing a documentary on your life, for crying out loud. There's so much that can be said about your story. But for those who've missed it, you're not just an expert on mold and Lyme because you studied it and treated it at length. You're an expert because you've also lived it. So give us just a short synopsis so people know kind of where you're coming from.
Sure. And not only that, I don't know if I've ever said this on the show, but I remember years ago, I said, I'm never going to treat that.
No, wow.
Never to God, because he's like, he always has a different plan for us. But my journey, real briefly, 25 breast cancer, 26 Crohn's disease. I was in medical school, got through both of those really, really difficult diseases, obviously. Lost all my hair, went through 3 drug chemotherapy, but I got through it. And I was in my 30s and doing well and thriving post-cancer, had survived. And, you know, I always say, and patients understand this so well, Lyme and mold are so mysterious to so many people. We're going to try to unpack some of those mysteries today, but it's almost easier to have cancer than to have Lyme or mold and not have people understand what you have and how you suffer. And maybe the fact that you look okay on the outside, but inside you don't feel okay. So I just want to acknowledge that to any of you out there who have dealt with this or are dealing with this or don't even know what you're dealing with. My story began when I moved to Boulder 2010, and the office that I worked in had some mold unbeknownst to me. 2013, there was a massive flood of epidemic proportions in Boulder, and my office got much worse. And there was, unbeknownst to me, growing in the basement just 2 stories down, and in my crawl space that was right under the office space that I saw patients in, some real nasty black molds, one called Stachy botrys and another called Ctomium. And I started going downhill, having shortness of breath, having red, irritated eyes, changes in vision. I was still able to help patients and see them, but I would have trouble with word finding or remembering names or certain things. And I just remember knowing there was something not quite right, but not knowing what it was. And finally, when I did testing, one of the ways you can do that is test your urine for evidence of mycotoxins from the mold, and it was highly positive. And then shortly after, I did an inspection in the basement, and we found the massive amounts of molds that were in my building. And I am so much better than I was 5-6 years ago, but I remember how difficult that time was. And like I said, it was actually, if I look back, I think it was easier to have cancer and to have the understanding than it was to deal with this mysterious illness. And at that time, I literally was on, I had to figure it out for my own survival. And so that was my impetus to really dive in and understand it on that deep level. And thank goodness, I feel like I'm healed from that. We'll talk today about the journey, because I still, Susie and I have been talking about this, I still have bad days once in a while. And I hope that encourages you, because sometimes people look at me and I'm, you know, doing stuff and working and think that everything's great. And I still have days that are difficult. So it's not a journey that just ends one day and it's over.
Right. It's not a straight line. Definitely not a straight line. And well, I appreciate that so much. And I think you're so right. You know, what's so difficult about it is, you know, doctors just shrug it off. I mean, I just did a quick search I saw just on the quick initial link of CDC saying, oh, mold can give you a little sneezy and red eyes. And, you know, and maybe they're digging into it more. I just didn't. But that there was another blog from a doctor, can black mold kill you? Absolutely not, he says.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
There's so much shrugging off, even though there's you have the capacity to prove it through urine and blood and even this neuroquant MRI. And I just think, Doc, how many people are struggling privately, and even how many people, I wonder, have received a wrong diagnosis of other things because they've been shrugged off, where it's actually treatable? And that's a kind of a loaded question, but maybe speak to it if you can.
Sure. So the thing about mold is, you mentioned in the beginning, and I'll just start there, about one in four, around 25% of the population genetically has trouble with their immune system tagging mold and mold-related toxins and clearing them from the body. So what's extra difficult about it, number one, is in the same house, in the same work environment, in the same school, you can have 25% of the people that are pretty dramatically affected, whether it's neurological symptoms like weakness, numbness, drowsiness, lack of concentration, or focus, changes in vision, changes in memory, or gut issues like heartburn or gas or bloating or even abdominal pain or diarrhea. You can also have things like congestion, sinus issues, sinus pressure, frequent infections, immune dysfunction. I mean, it can really affect all systems in the body. And so in that same environment, you can have one person that's dramatically affected and two or three others that have no idea or very minimal symptoms. Now, I believe mold is toxic enough in seriously contaminated environments that eventually even those people who are not genetically susceptible will have some symptoms. They may not be to any related severity, but that's number one, the difficulty. Number two is in medical school, we're taught about one arm of the immune system. It's called adaptive immunity. It's basically allergies. And this happens with mold, but usually it's not real serious. It'll cause the red, itchy eyes and irritation and sneezing and maybe even asthma, but it's not life-threatening in the systemic effect. There's a whole other part of the immune system that is ignored when we have this discussion, and it's called the innate immune system. And when these toxins start to trigger that immune system, that's the same arm of the immune system that COVID and some of the long haulers and even people who get very sick from that is triggered. And by now, people have heard of cytokines and all of those types of terms. That's the part of the immune system that can be affected by mold that can really do serious damage.
Wow, we're going to pause here. When we come back, I want you to talk about what CIRS is, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, and we welcome your questions as well. You're a little quiet today. I'd love to hear from you. You can text them in at 877-933-2484. Talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan, we're going to talk about mold toxicity, how to diagnose it or just at least discern if that might be an issue for you, how to possibly treat it, and then also about Lyme disease. And then again, we'll take your questions. We'll be back in a minute. It. There's a melody, God's singing over you. And one of the things we're talking about today is mold toxicity. And the reason this matters is one in four people don't have the genetic makeup to be able to process mold correctly. And as Dr. Jill was saying, even if you do have the genetic makeup, there's so many buildings with mold in them that over time you will be impacted in ways you probably can't imagine. And the story, some of the stories I've read of people who maybe once had an Alzheimer's diagnosis, only to find out it was mold that attacked their brain, and they treated it aggressively, reversed the diagnosis, said, oh, this wasn't Alzheimer's, and this person got their life back. I mean, it is amazing. And Dr. Jill, it seems like, you know, more and more, because it's sort of exploding on the scene, doctors who once maybe skeptics are now going, I need to learn more about this, because there's tangible scientific evidence of it. It shows up in the blood, it shows up in the urine, and then it shows up, and when you treat them, they get their lives back.
Yeah, so that's the difficulty, is because this can affect so many different systems. I may have mentioned this before, Susie, but the trichocythenes, which are a type of toxin produced by some of the really nasty black molds, like the one that I was exposed to, these are actually used. You can look it up in the WHO, you know, the World Health Organization, as chemical warfare agents, because they're known to be so toxic. So this is not, you can find this in the literature. This is not a new science. And what's interesting, if we really want to know, some of the science has been around 20, 30 years, they look at the food of animals like horses and cows and livestock, because of course the farmers don't want to lose their animals. And they have done a lot of studies on the effects of that in animal populations. And it's just now starting to catch up with humans, but humans are affected just as much.
You know, survivingmold.com, Dr. Shoemaker, I think you serve on a board with him, don't you? Or you're connected somehow, right? Or no?
Yeah, I studied with Dr. Shoemaker. He was the original teacher of a lot of this. And then ICEI, another nonprofit organization, if you want more info, those are two great. That one is ISEAI.org, and they're both nonprofit, free kind of clearinghouses of resources that are great information if you want to learn more.
Yeah, so I'd hopped on survivingmold.com and I looked, and they had in the About tab, there was a story of a young gal. She was a star athlete. She was a student, a musician, and then she got very sick because of the high school she was attending. And that they tried everything. They did all kinds of tests, could not figure it out, and knew somebody who knew somebody who knew about mold. And after pushing and pushing, they got the school tested, and they said off the charts levels of mold, wow, dangerous to the point that they had not seen before. So then they started to survey some of the students, and many were very sick, didn't know why, and it was from that. And now she's in the university. She's treated it. She had diagnosed with CIRS, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, and so she's just got her life back and thriving in every way. And yet she, like me, will walk into a building and will know instantly if it's moldy. Like for me, I could be a mold inspector. I mean, within minutes, my head goes numb. That's just hard, but I suppose it's good that we react. But maybe say a word about that story. I mean, just that story being kind of a, not, I don't want to say typical, but that is an example of stories that you've seen and heard and been a part of over and over again.
Yes, I love that because it can be young, healthy, like you mentioned earlier, someone who's starting to have early onset dementia. So autoimmunity is a big one. If someone has new onset autoimmunity for no other reason, mold is a big trigger to drive. And autoimmunity just means when your body creates antibodies that attack self. So it could be Hashimoto's thyroiditis, ulcerative colitis, rheumatoid arthritis, things like lupus, multiple sclerosis, and you know of these as different entities because they attack different organ systems, but they all are autoimmune. Other things are mental, so cognition, changes in focus, concentration, memory, word finding, all the thought processes. The allergic stuff we talked about, so if someone presents with new onset adult asthma or new onset wheezing or coughing or runny nose or rashes, those are common new onset gut symptoms. And then some weird things, sensitivity to light or sound, numbness or tingling in your hands or feet, or neuropathies that are new. Weight gain is sadly really common, like actually very extreme, 20, 30, 40 pounds with no change in diet or exercise. Mold will affect the leptin receptors, which allow you to burn fat, and those get kind of shut down, so it's really hard to lose weight. Muscle cramps, joint pain, and mood disorders are really common too. I've seen mold create people feeling like they don't want to live anymore. I mean, just really very serious mood symptoms. So as you can hear from my symptoms, I listed them. So if you're out there listening, you might think of how this practically could affect you. It's a wide variety of things. And the difficulty, the one way you might know it's mold is if you change in environments, like say you go on vacation and you feel better when you're away from your house or your workplace, or on the weekend you feel better because you're not at school or at work, or, you know, et cetera. So there's ways that you can think about this puzzle. And if it's different in different environments, or if it's new onset symptoms, those are some of the things that I think about.
Okay, we've got a number of questions that have come in. This one, I recently took an Everly Well food sensitivity test. I'm still waiting for results. Once I get the results, what do you suggest for next steps?
Yeah, so food sensitivities typically are IgG. Food allergy would be IgE. IgE is your classical, like anaphylaxis, but a lot of the tests now will check these other systemic antibodies. And what that means is, say it's pineapple or egg or soy or corn that you're sensitive to, that means you have some degree of intestinal permeability or leaky gut where these foods have actually crossed over into the bloodstream and your body created an antibody to them. So while temporarily getting those foods out of your diet can allow you to feel a lot better, in fact, most times it makes a huge difference. The real issue is a leaky gut. So what I would do is if you have a lot of food sensitivities that come up on one of those tests, you have to help find a functional doctor or look, you know, find some information and really start to work on healing the gut. Things like glutamine powder can be helpful. Probiotics can be helpful. Vitamin D and vitamin A, zinc and zinc carnosine, some real basic things that will help to heal your gut. And for people who don't have the money or time or availability to get food allergy tests, usually gluten, dairy, and sugar are the top three that we find. So you can just take those out of your diet and see how you feel.
Wow, very good. This listener said, I tuned in a bit late, so maybe this question was already asked, but is there a way to test for mold in your house?
Great question. So there's two things: is how do you test your body? How do you test your home? Because those are both relevant. Because you want to find out, is my body being affected by mold? But then you also want to know which environment is it: home or work or car. And yes, your car can be affected by mold. So testing an environment involves usually an inspector, because you need to find the source. But a lot of people are in places where it's hard to find a good inspector, or you maybe want to start there. I almost always recommend what they now call qPCR testing. It used to be called ERMI, E-R-M-I. And you can do that, order it yourself. I have no affiliation with the website, but it's on micrometrics.com or environmentalbiotics.com. Both of those sites offer ERMI or qPCR testing, and they literally will send you like a Swiffer cloth. You collect a dust sample from your home and you send it in. That's just the starting point, but it's something that you can have control over without hiring an inspector, to see if there's reason to do more investigation and hire an inspector. So I usually recommend starting there.
You can have, sorry about that, you can have negative air tests, because some of the more dangerous mold is heavy and lands in the dust. Is that right?
Absolutely. So if you've had, I cannot tell you, Susie, the number of patients with severe exposures, maybe home or work, that have said, I've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 inspections that are negative. Now, it doesn't mean that all inspections are bad, because I really recommend getting a professional involved. But the spores and some of the fragments that are in the air, if it's in the air in some of these cases, it's really severe. So you may miss the more minor issues. And most of the time, you look around your house, things look beautiful. Like you said in the beginning, you can have a $1 million home or a historical building that's, you know, architecturally beautiful and still have a massive mold issue that's not visible. So that's the important thing to remember. It's often hidden behind walls, under floors, and so checking the air may look pretty good.
So if you get this ERMI test, and what is it called again now?
qPCR. PCR is just the type of testing it does. They do actually DNA detection of the mold in the sample. And the only reason we switched that, I'll try to keep this brief, but the ERMI score, the original way they scored that, was kind of proven to be not very valid, but the numbers when they do the test are still valid. So we don't use that bottom line score, which is called an ERMI, but the actual numbers, they'll list the mold and the amount in the environment, that is perfectly valid, and that's called a qPCR. It's still called an ERMI, so either way. But if you talk to inspectors, sometimes you'll get the varying opinions on that ERMI number.
And when you have the breakdown of the molds in that test, it could be that you react to a specific mold. So the number in itself may not need to be high for it to be negatively impacting you. So that's why exploration is so important. Wow, there's so much to know here, and I see more questions coming in. I'm going to set this one up for you. Considering taking a depression medication because I can't seem to retrain my brain. I use DNRS, wondering, and that's kind of a limbic retraining system, online course. I took it too. It's excellent. What you think about depression medication and hopes to use it short-term to help with the effects of depression from chronic inflammatory response syndrome. You got about 20 seconds if you have a quick answer. Otherwise, we can tackle it on the other side.
Okay, short answer is yes. I just feel like sometimes medications are a crutch that is a perfectly appropriate use of something like that short term. And we can talk about more answers after the break.
Very, very good. All righty. And Sherry wants to know, how do we bring this up to our physicians? What kind of tests should we be asking for? Boy, it seems really important to be going to a doc who knows about mold. But I'll let the doc actually answer, the actual real doc between the two of us, I'll let her answer that question. More with Dr. Jill Carnahan in just a moment. Glad to have you listening today. I'm Susie Larson, talking to my good friend, Dr. Jill Carnahan, who joins us every month to talk about health in the healing process. Today, we're talking about mold toxicity. Did you know 1 in 4 people don't have the genetic makeup to be able to process mold in a way that keeps them healthy? And so there are a number of misdiagnoses out there. And if you were to be able to treat the mold, you might notice health that you're otherwise not really achieving and enjoying. Also going to talk about Lyme here in just a moment. We have so many questions that we could devote another whole show to this, Doc, but I'll revisit this one. I'm considering taking depression medicine because I can't seem to retrain my brain. I have used DNRS, and again, that's a limbic retraining system to help deal with the limbic responses when we're exposed and that kind of thing. Wondering what you think about depression medicine, and hopes to use it short-term to help with the effects of depression from CIRS, C-I-R-S, stands for Chronic Inflammatory Response Syndrome, when you've been over and over and over exposed to mold, and it creates this inflammatory response that's chronic. So just wanted to give context. And if I didn't explain any of that correctly, Jill, go ahead and fix what
sure.
I said.
I think you did a great job. Before the break, my short answer was yes. I feel like meds are there for a reason, and I'm an MD, so I do prescribe. By all means, if there's natural ways that we can heal the body without medication or surgery, I will always choose to try that first. Some of the things, it depends how severe it is, but I just wanted you to feel like it's okay to take medication at times, and sometimes that's what we need. It's like a crutch when we have a broken leg temporarily. Short-term is best for those kinds of things, but no problem, no guilt, no shame if you need medication. However, there are some things you could try first. There's precursors of serotonin that you can give the body, and sometimes your body will kick in and make that chemical and you'll feel better. Things like 5-HTP, tryptophan, vitamin B6, magnesium, and other things can be really helpful for feeling down or sad or overwhelmed or hopeless. And sometimes that will work. You could try short-term supplements, and if they don't work, then try a medication. If you're feeling anxiety, other things like GABA and theanine and even the 5-HTP could help in that realm. It can also be helpful. So there's a lot of natural amino acids and supplements that can give you a really good amount of relief. But again, if it's significant, short-term medications are okay.
This dear listener says, I have a question for Dr. Jill. We found an attached small tick to our 5-year-old nearly 2 weeks ago. We live in central Minnesota. I brought her to a doctor the next day. The doctor did not have us do anything but observe her and schedule a blood test for a few weeks from now. If you were us, how would you proceed to see if our daughter has been affected by this tick and possibly Lyme's?
Oh, I have tons of nieces. I have 18 nieces and nephews, and they range from 2 to 22, I think. So I have a lot of kiddos that I am auntie to, and we just had not too long ago, I think in July, one of my nephews got bit by a tick, and we had a similar situation. So what I did in that case was I gave them some herbal anti-Lyme remedies. With a 5-year-old, I don't know that I would go to antibiotics unless I had some evidence that the tick was infected. You can send a tick out to something called Tick Check and have them analyze and see if the tick is carrying Lyme or co-infection. So if you want to check that, you could. I will say the reason why this listener is asking the question is because if you know that someone gets bit by a tick and infected with Lyme, it is 1,000 times easier to treat right at the time of that tick bite than to deal with long-term sequelae 5 or 10 years later. So there is an urgency in the sense of if you do know someone got Lyme disease acutely, which would show up as IgM for Western blot Lyme in a regular lab test, and sometimes it's missed, so sometimes the test could be negative, then you would want to treat 100% absolutely with something like Zithromax, doxycycline. There's several antibiotics, and usually for a minimum of 3 to 4 weeks. So I understand, but with a 5-year-old, I do not think I would put my 5-year-old on an antibiotic unless I was pretty sure that it really was infected. But what I would do is I would do some herbal alternatives for a month or two.
So would you get that 5-year-old to a doctor who will do a blood test immediately if that your other doctor is saying come back in 3 weeks?
So the difficulty is it may not show up immediately. So even if you had a doc willing to test, you'd likely get a negative test for the first few weeks. But then you're wasting time if he's really infected. So if it were me, I would put him on some herbal prophylaxis. I would send the tick out to be checked. And if I had any evidence of flu-like symptoms, change in pain levels, lack of like some really significant flu-y kind of symptoms, I would treat the child even at 5.
Okay, very good. This one says, my sister at 52 years old has been having dizzy spells for a few years now. She's in the last few months, have had it so bad she's falling and injuring herself. She's had head scans, many different tests, nothing showing up. What type of test would she need to take to see if she's being affected by mold or Lyme?
Okay, so let's go back. We talked about environmental testing, and I didn't really tell you exactly the workup for a human. But if you have a suspicion that you're being affected by mold, this is kind of the basics that you would do. And one of the listeners that asked what kind of doctor, you can ask for some of these tests from your regular doctors, but many of them are not knowledgeable, and so they're not very willing to order. And the two organizations that Susie and I mentioned earlier, you could find docs through survivingmold.com and the ISEAI or ICI.org. Both of those organizations train and they have doctors who know it, what this is about. So those would be places to look for a doc in your area that might be knowledgeable. So number one, you can do a visual contrast study online, VCS test. Online, I think there's several free ones. There's one on surviving mold. This checks visual acuity, and it's a free way to screen to see if your visual acuity is affected, which might be biotoxin related. When we say biotoxins, that's just biological toxins from mold or Lyme. So if you fail that test, that would be one more reason to do further testing, and that's a free way to screen. You can look at my blogs and survivingmold.com. My website's just my name, and basically I have a list of symptoms there. Surviving Mold has a list of symptoms there, and you can look up the symptoms and see, do I fit many of these symptoms? So that's another way, and both of those are free. Now, blood test, you mentioned CIRS, Susie, chronic inflammatory response syndrome. This is that innate immune response that often happens with mold that could cause things like dizziness, lightheadedness, strange heart changes, like heart rate changes, things like neuropathies or numbness or tingling that are all over the body. And those would include TGF-beta, MMP9, VEGF, antidiuretic hormone or ADH, and osmolality. And again, these are very complex innate immune markers, but if all of those come back abnormal, and you can read these on survivingmold.com if you can't remember what I'm saying, those are signs of innate immune response. But I will tell you, if your doctor does a regular comprehensive metabolic liver, kidney, blood counts, most people will look perfectly normal. So it's very easy to miss this diagnosis. One of the other things that's real important and I found to be incredibly useful is testing the urine for mycotoxins. There's three big companies that do that. If a doc doesn't know about these companies or know about mold, they may not be willing to test, but you can test the urine for mold toxins, and I find that to be another really great way to diagnose a patient.
So the nonprofit that you're part of, how do you say it again?
Yeah, it's ICI, and it's International Society for Environmentally Acquired Illness.
So would they be able to find docs? Because it's what's so, amazing is that there are more and more MDs. I love that you're both an MD and a functional med, and that is a dream. I wish we could clone you a million times over. But the idea that the more and more docs are getting the information from that nonprofit and getting trained to treat and to look. Because I remember for me, they took 20 tubes of blood. They did the neuroquant. They did the urinalysis. And it just showed up like you cannot believe. And I did the visual contrast and failed miserably.
Yes.
And every month on the binders and all the protocol that I was on, I kept failing, but I got a better score until one day I passed. And it was like such a massive achievement. I'm like, somebody give me a medal here. But I mean, because it's meticulous and it's a fight. But would they be able to find doctors, connections with doctors on that website or not?
Yes, Susie, we have people who call in all the time, and of course I can't see everybody who calls in, but that's exactly where I send them, is that site, because I know it's a nonprofit. It's, I have no affiliation other than they give good information out, and they train doctors. I'm part of the board, so I do teach some of the doctors there. But any doctor on that website has gone through training on environmentally acquired illness and mold, and most of them are quite knowledgeable about both mold and Lyme disease. So yes, that's exactly where I would send them to look for a doc in their area.
Okay, give me that website one more time in case someone needs it.
Sure. It's ISEAI.org. And if you want to remember it, it's just the International Society for Environmentally Acquired Illness.
Okay, thank you for that. This dear listener says, I live in a small apartment with poor air circulation. The windowsills have some rot behind the drywall. Is there a way for me to take a sample of it and send it somewhere to get it tested? I've noticed that when I'm out of my apartment, I usually feel more fresh and awake. And where would be the prime area in the house or apartment to take a sample? Any thoughts there?
So great question. In this case, I would involve an inspector in your area, because that's a bulk sample is a really easy thing for even inspectors that aren't the best in the world to know what to do with. That's what I did in the basement of my office when I first found it. I literally, and it's funny, I look back, Susie, I wasn't even wearing any sort of mask or protective gear. I had no idea. I was staring with just regular street clothes on and nothing covering my face at this black mold, and we scraped off a piece of it and sent it in. So in Denver here, we have a kind of a clearinghouse place where people could send samples, but usually an inspector will have an account with them. So if you get your, you know, local mold inspector and have them come take a sample, that's the easiest way. You could do it yourself, but you probably would pay more and, you know, have to deal with the mold. And I would recommend getting someone in to do that. One other thing you mentioned is air circulation. So if you are in a moldy environment and maybe you can't immediately move or remediate, or you're struggling, or like this listener said that they feel worse at home, this is a key. Dilution is the solution to pollution. I said that before. What that means is opening windows and getting some air circulation in. If you can afford to get an air filter in your house, those things will actually help you out a lot while you wait for the remediation.
Yeah, and on Jill's website, there's all kinds of, she has Dr. Jill Health as the store side, and then Jill Carnahan is on the other side. And she's got a tab, I believe it's on Jill Carnahan, Things We Love. So it's not stuff that even necessarily that she sells, but like air purifiers and different things that can help you, just for reference. We're gonna jump off the Lyme mold for just a moment, but friends, I see so many more questions coming in about treating chronic Lyme and others, and we're going to get to those, so hang with me. But Shelley wants to know if you have any recommendations for the lingering brain fog that follows COVID.
Yes, and you mentioned at the beginning, Susie, Dr. Troy has seen, I'm seeing the exact same thing. So for those of us who practice functional or integrative medicine, this COVID long haul is like, of course we see COVID long haul, because for 20 years I've been seeing post-infectious brain changes. So Lyme, Epstein-Barr virus, CMV, and now COVID, this is not new. And the same exact mechanisms and patterns are happening, just like we've seen for years with other infections. And that's why Dr. Troy and I both are like, yeah, this is not really new. So the question is what to do about it. It's inflammation-based. So if you can do any anti-inflammatory things, I find things like turmeric and boswellia and SPMs, which are a type of things that modulate prostaglandins. These are all over-the-counter kinds of supplements that can help. One of my favorite brain supports is just acetyl L-carnitine. It's a precursor of acetylcholine, our main executive chemical. And just taking acetyl L-carnitine can be real powerful for kind of boosting that ability to focus and concentrate without drugs.
Boy. All right, we're going to pause here. When we come back, Jim wants to know, how does a doctor treat chronic Lyme disease? And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, is charcoal. Charcoal is one of the binders we use to bind mold. Should everybody have charcoal on hand? And if so, in what ways should they use it? Got a few other questions as well. Talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan. More with her in just a moment. You to believe that help is on the way. God sees you, he hears you, and we're doing our best here on the show to help equip you to really get on the path of health and healing. I'm Susie Larson. My friend Dr. Jill Carnahan joins me today. We're talking very specifically about mold and Lyme, and we've tackled a lot of mold questions, and there's still more coming in, but I want to make sure we address Jim's question. And I know we really, Jill, could do a full hour on just on Lyme, because there's so many aspects to the co-infections and the chronicity of it all. But what would you say in a nutshell to Jim about how you treat chronic Lyme?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the real minute or two spiel that I give my patients, because I'm not avoiding the question, but there's something really important to understand. Almost all of the cases of chronic illness that I deal with in functional medicine come down to a very simple equation. It's infectious burden plus toxic load. So what that is what kind of infections did you get exposed to chickenpox as a child? Do you have Epstein-Barr from, you know, teenage years? Were you bit by a tick when you were 12? And all of these things are in our body. And if our immune system is strong and robust, we all have chronic infections that are lying dormant if our immune system is strong and robust and keeping them in check, and they don't really cause illness. So then the other piece of that, the toxic load, environmental chemicals, mercury fillings, maybe silicone breast implants, environmental air quality like mold. There's so many BPA, phthalates, parabens, charbroiled meats. There's tons of things that add to our toxic load. So if you are one of the canaries like Susie and I, and we're more sensitive to chemicals and environmental toxins, those things start to wear down our immune system and create an ability for these infections to pop their heads up and cause problems and illness. So I frame that because the problem is not just the infection. Virulence, meaning the ability to have something to kill you, of Lyme and of even Epstein-Barr are very low. So when they become a problem, when they become symptomatic, it's just that the immune system has become so weak that it cannot keep that in check. And the reason this discussion is so important is just throwing antibiotics without treating the immune system and the toxic load will do no good long term. I do treat Lyme with antibiotics, but I always give patients a choice of if we start with herbal remedies or antibiotics, because antibiotics have their own set of side effects. And again, if you're not addressing the toxic load, you're actually contributing more to that toxic load by giving medications. So I do use medications. There's a perfectly appropriate place for those, but it's really important to think about this bigger picture, because if your immune system isn't working or you're toxically overloaded with mold, those things have to be taken care of first before treating the infection.
If you want more information from Jill on that, I bet you could go to YouTube and search her name and maybe comma Lyme disease, or go to her website. There's just so many interviews that Jill, you've done with experts and written so many blog posts on these different topics. So I think you could probably find more expanded information on those things, on how to detox, lower that toxic load. And it really does go back to so many of these functional med practices of healing your gut and detoxing your body. And, you know, it's so interesting, but I have so many questions. Let's talk charcoal for just a moment, because one of the things that, you know, I keep on hand is activated charcoal, and there's different kinds of charcoal. GI detox is one that I really like that really came from a suggestion for you. Talk about the role of charcoal. Is it only for mold people? I shouldn't say that. We're not mold people.
Yeah.
People who struggle. We're not moldy people. Or is it for people who should really bind toxins because they've been exposed?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a few things I keep in my travel bag that, like, go with me whenever I leave the house, like, for more than a day or so. Charcoal is one of them, Susie. Charcoal is basically a non-absorbable sponge. So if you get food poisoning, I don't drink alcohol, but if you drink too much alcohol, if you get a mold exposure, your hotel room is musty. All of these things can be remedied pretty quickly by charcoal. So it is a really wonderful, you know, DIY remedy that works in a lot of cases. I still, 5 years later after the mold, take charcoal at least 3 times a week, if not every day, because I have enough toxic exposure or ongoing little bits of exposure that I find it helpful. I have not found it to be massively depleting of nutrients or minerals as long as taken on an empty stomach. And I don't take huge doses on a daily basis, but I just find it to be a wonderful remedy. And you can get activated charcoal over the counter for $5 or $10 a bottle. It's so inexpensive. You don't need fancy. There's wonderful brands and combinations out there, but you don't even need a fancy brand. And it is really, really helpful for a toxic load.
And super important to take 2 hours away from medicine, because it will bind the ability for your body to make use of those medicines. All right, this dear listener emailed in, my husband suffers from peripheral neuropathy and doctors have been unable to find a cause or effective treatment. He's a livestock handler, works in barns with cattle, wondering if mold might be a possible cause. And right away, I'm thinking of glyphosate as well. But what do you say? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. And I've dealt with, I grew up on a farm, so I can talk about farmers, my siblings. In fact, just the other day, my brother texted me and said, I got doused with Roundup. What do I do? And I'm like, oh, you know, at this point, you would hope that they wouldn't be. Anyway, so we deal with that. But all that to say, so on a farm with cattle, yes, the hay, I've seen a lot of barns and places with horses or cows, because hay is very frequently moldy. It gets stored, it gets damp, and mold grows on hay. Some of the cattle, horses, dogs, all can carry tick-borne infections. So out here in Colorado where I live, where Lyme disease is not considered endemic, a lot of the cases that I diagnose with Lyme have been around horses or cattle or dogs, and they get it from an animal. So infections, mold, absolutely. And whenever I think neurological, this infectious load, toxic burden is at the forefront, because it is one of the big causes of neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, neuropathies, MS, et cetera.
John says, thanks so much for today's show. We have loved ones with irritable bowel syndrome. Any tips on where to begin for treating this problem?
Yeah, so irritable bowel syndrome is this generic term that doctors use to describe, you know, more frequent than not, gas or bloating or discomfort in the belly. And it's very vague. There is a set of criteria, but it doesn't really tell you what's causing the problem. About 70 to 80% of IBS cases actually are from SIBO or SIFO. This stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or small intestinal fungal overgrowth. Many doctors, including most gastroenterologists, can diagnose that by doing a breath test for hydrogen and methane and see if those are high. And you can test blood, stool, and urine for yeast markers as well and see if there's a fungal overgrowth. And that can be treated with herbs or antibiotics. And that will often give people a significant relief from IBS.
Well, so interesting. I don't remember if it was you and I talked about it, if I read it somewhere, but that young people maybe who live in moldy basements, let's say you've got an older house and there's proven mold in the basement and you've got your son or daughter living down there and they end up with Tourette's and then they move out and the Tourette's goes away and it's connected to the mold. Have you heard of that sort of dynamic?
100%. Yes, I have several, I'd say half a dozen cases of that exact scenario, and usually it's younger people. We can see, so just like we talked about depression, anxiety, on the anxiety spectrum is OCD, and it usually results in either too little serotonin or too much dopamine or some combination of abnormal neurotransmitter production. So there's often a genetic predisposition towards that. But then you add a toxin like mold to the load, and they'll present with some significant symptoms. And I have seen the same thing where they resolve after they're treated for mold.
Just got a few minutes left, so I want to jump back to Lyme. Say a word about co-infections. Hearing more about, I mean, back when I was first diagnosed with Lyme 30-something years ago, I don't remember ever hearing anything about co-infections. But what are they? How do you get them?
Yeah, so they say, you might have heard this phrase, that ticks are nature's dirty needles. And the reason we say that is because it's very rare for someone who gets bit by a tick to get just one infection. They now carry many different viruses, and they carry many different bacteria and even parasites. So the other thing about ticks is the classical Lyme rash that we hear about 30% of people who get bit by a New England tick get a bullseye rash and maybe have the classical Lyme disease. But there are so many other variants that are not the classical Borrelia. There's Babesia, there's Bartonella, there's Ehrlichia, Anaplasma, and then there's a whole slew of viruses and parasites. And these can all come from spiders or ticks, even mosquitoes. I had a case of bed bugs giving someone Babesia in Chicago. So things that you would never expect and don't always equal a bullseye rash. So many patients don't remember getting bit by a tick or even remember a rash, and they can still be infected. And what happens with these co-infections is they can make it really confusing and muddy the waters because the symptoms, like for example, Babesia might present more with air hunger and anxiety and insomnia and disequilibrium where patients feel off balance, but not pain and fatigue. So they have different like clusters of symptoms, and based on the infection, it looks a little bit different.
Boy, wow, there's just so much here. Thank you so much. We've just got a little bit of time left, but you've seen patients who've walked through these things get better and get their life back. So maybe say a word of encouragement to that person listening today going, I have those symptoms. I haven't been diagnosed, but I know I live in a moldy home or, you know, what kind of hope can you offer?
Well, I just start with my own experience because I've been diagnosed with 4 tick-borne infections, mold illness, cancer, Crohn's, you name it. I am God's guinea pig, and I now just accept it. But what he's done in my life is allow me through experience to learn a depth of understanding that I would never learn in any textbook. But I say that because I'm writing a book, producing a documentary, running a full-time practice. Love talking to you, Susie, and I get to do all these beautiful things, and I'm so passionate about it because listener, if you are suffering, I've been there. I know how it feels to not know if you can get out of bed. Like, that's the truth. And I just want to say that because there's hope. Like, I'm living, I still have some days that are difficult. That is the truth. But the truth is, I also have overcome so much by God's grace. And if you're there and you're feeling overwhelmed or hopeless, there is always hope and there's answers. And there's so many doctors like me. One of my passions is helping to train more doctors because there are so many people suffering. So just remember, keep looking. Don't give up hope. You have the power to continue to find answers for yourself and look. And granted, it'd be great to have a good doctor to help you for sure. But even if you don't have a doctor yet or you're looking for someone, there are answers online. That's one of the reasons I put out free resources. There's other websites out there. Keep looking. Don't give up. There is hope to live a vibrant, healthy life where you're doing exactly what God wants you to do.
Oh, amen. You can sign up for Dr. Jill's newsletter just today. The newsletter came out, Connecting Mold to EMF. Super interesting. There's so many topics like that that she writes extensively about. And Doc, we love you and appreciate you. Thank you for giving us your time today.
Thank you, Susie.
Appreciate you so much. And I pray you found some encouragement here. Don't give up hope. I really believe God wants you well. We're here to help you get there. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Susie Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.